The South Akron Youth Mentorship is exactly what the name implies. These folks mentor the youth of Akron, Ohio. If you would like to volunteer or perhaps help with a charitable donation, please visit saymentor.org and find out how you can help out today. That's saymentor.org.
Welcome to the Phil Nasons Show.
Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We'll be here for the entire hour, and we will talk Oakland A's baseball. We'll do some fantasy baseball, National League starting pitching, sleepers today, New York Mets. Ugh, I don't even want to do that segment anymore, but I have to because I like working with Mark Berman. And then we have a great NBA game today. Golden State Warriors, Atlanta Hawks, and Chris Willis and I go and do a side-by-side comparison of the two teams. But up first, man, is there a war in Winnipeg? And we love wars in hockey. And joining me to talk all about that, and probably just that, please welcome from ArcticIceHockey.com, Travis Rubinick is in the house. Travis, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing well. It seems like it's been way too long since I talked to you, Phil.
It's been a long time. It felt really weird last Friday not having you here. People were writing in wanting to know if I stopped talking hockey. I said, no, we just couldn't connect on Friday, but we're here. And yeah. I'm sorry I had to put you through that long intro. But
oh, it's all good.
It's all good because what we're about to talk about is going to be even better. This is great radio.
Oh, yeah.
Evander Kane. He's got some issues with the Winnipeg Jets. Winnipeg Jets have issues with him. He has been put on the injured reserve list, and he can't come off now, I guess, until the 10th of February. But he's not injured. You want to fill us in on what's happening with young Evander Kane?
It's complex. I'll start from the beginning. I guess it was Monday night. The Jets had a game in – or no, it was Tuesday night, I believe. The Jets had a game in Vancouver. And as things were kicking off, as the game was about to start, Evander Kane was announced as a healthy scratch as a coach's decision. And obviously when you do that, that's going to draw some attention. There's history with Evander Kane and Paul Maurice and there being, healthy scratches before for Evander for discipline issues, you could say. Everyone was asking questions. Nothing was really being said by the Jets. Everything is kept nice and quiet. And which obviously isn't going to last very long when you make a move such as that with Evander Kane, especially in this city. He's kind of a lightning bolt for controversy or a lightning rod for controversy. Then the next day, it was released that the reason he was scratched was because he wore a tracksuit to a team meeting, which had a lot of people wondering, well, that seems kind of extreme to scratch a guy in his hometown when he wore a tracksuit, obviously, but the rules are rules and things are the way they're supposed to be. And that kind of kept carrying forward and people were talking about what's going to happen until I think it was Chris Johnson from Sportsnet yesterday released that apparently what occurred was Evander was on his way to a team meeting. He thought it was at the hotel. He has a house in Vancouver, so he was staying at home. He thought the meeting was at the hotel, so he was wearing a tracksuit. But it turned out it was at the rink. By the time he realized it was at the rink, he didn't have time to go get a suit, so he headed over to the arena. Teammates apparently were not exactly fans of the fact that he broke dress code. And Dustin Byfuglien, I believe, is the one who's being called as the guy who, at whatever point, whether Evander was working out at the time or getting treatment or in the showers, whatever it was, took Evander's clothing and threw them in the shower, to which Evander did not necessarily like and decided to leave and not show up for the game that night. Pretty much got a hold of the team about an hour before puck drop, said, I'm not playing, screw you guys, and didn't show up. And now he's been placed on IR and things have gone crazy and everything's going nuts. Here's where the situation gets interesting, though, is Evander... Obviously, there's an issue, and when something like this happens, I think it kind of calls it, the guy needs to be moved. I've been a big supporter of Evander Kane. I think a lot of his tactics have always been off the ice. A lot of the stuff, I think, has been rather harmless, and people have blown it way out of proportion. But this time it's affected product on the ice. The Jets currently don't have an extra forward in the lineup because they have so many defensemen. Dustin Byfuglien was forced to move up to being a forward, and that's a problem with the Jets. The Jets are a much worse team with Evander Kane not in the lineup. And now that he has deliberately or whatever pulled himself out, that's a problem. And I can understand where Evander's anger is coming from. He has been a good soldier this year. He's playing through. He is technically, yeah, he was just put on IR. He is technically injured. He's been playing through what people believe is some pretty serious injuries. Fractures have been spoken of. Apparently he has a shoulder injury. Whatever it is, surgery is what's needed for him to not feel pain anymore. And he's been putting that off to keep playing with the team. So what my perspective is with Evander right now is he's put off surgery, playing through a lot of pain. He's been trucking it through on the third line. He really is not a third line player in the NHL. He's a much better player than that. He's playing with his second or third rookie center in as many years. He's sucked it up. He's taking less power play minutes. He's sucking it up, playing on the penalty kill, giving up personal goals and literally personal goals and personal points and a lot of personal accolades for the team. And I think at that point, whether this has happened before or whatever the issue is, it was kind of his, all right, you know what? I'm dealing with all this stuff. I've been a good soldier and you guys are going to pull this crap with me. Screw you guys. I'm done here. And I think that was kind of the line in the sand. I think he handled it pretty immaturely. He's getting paid $5-6 million a year to show up and play hockey. I think you need to still show up and let things be handled internally. But the Jets let this get out of hand. Leadership core in that locker room let it get out of hand. It got out, leaked out to the media. So rather than this being something the team can put a lid on and control, it's suddenly become the big story in Winnipeg, the big story across Canada, the big story in the NHL right now, that Evander Kane is pretty much a ruined asset. The team needs to do something with him. They can't keep him around. Teams are calling. Chevy's not in a great trade position. The Jets have very quickly gone from a they should be making the playoffs team to they've lost five straight games. They're about to lose one of their key pieces, and something needs to happen quickly to save this season.
A big trade with Pittsburgh would make the deal. That's what they need to do, because he's not going to play for them anymore. And you know what? If it were me, I wouldn't either. I'm soldiering it through. Okay, I handled it bad, but you shouldn't have thrown my stuff in the shower.
Yeah, like I think Gary Lawless actually wrote a really well-rounded article. A lot of blame does go on Evander Kane in this situation. And yeah, I'm sure stuff has happened before, but blame's got to go everywhere right now. That's something that even if it does happen, you cannot let leak out. You need to deal with that in your room. And so that's where Paul Maurice has got to come in and figure this out. Kevin Cheveldayoff hasn't done his job to provide assets so the Jets can handle a situation like this. Losing one player out of your lineup shouldn't be a huge detriment to your entire team. And no, I don't think losing Evander Kane is going to completely collapse the entire team, but it's going to affect them pretty negatively, and they need to act quickly. And it's a mess right now, and they need to act very swiftly and very intelligently to fix this problem. And it's ugly.
Well, it is ugly, but the best thing for them to do is trade him. You can't bring him back in the locker room anymore.
Trade him at this point.
No, okay. This is nuts. I mean, it's too bad because Evander Kane, he should be a 40-goal scorer.
He's a hell of a hockey player. There's no denying that. He's a great hockey player.
Right.
But they've got to move him at this point, and it sucks for the team as a whole because Kevin Cheveldayoff has made it very clear he's not a guy who wants to act quickly and do things on a whim. He still hasn't made an NHL player for NHL player trade yet, and the Jets, he's been in charge of the Jets since 2011. So he's now got to figure something out to get Evander Kane moved, and the smart move for him right now is to bring in assets that can be useful right now. So that, I think, seriously limits what he can do. A team like Pittsburgh, I don't know if they're going to be able to. I don't know Pittsburgh's cap situation right now, so I don't know if they can afford to add another $6 million cap hit or $5.2 whatever million dollar cap hit, but they've got to do something quickly and they've got to make something work. And I think you'll see in the next couple of weeks whether the Jets are folding it in this season and just saying, we'll do see what we can do with what we've got now, or if they're seriously going to get things going, because they've still got guys like Michael Frolik they've got to deal with. They've got Dustin Bufflin on an expiring contract next year, Andrew Ladd on expiring. Like, there's a lot of things the Jets needed to get done this year, and people were worried that they weren't going to figure it out before this happened. Now he's got an even bigger situation on the plate, and Kevin Cheveldayoff has to prove his worthiness as an NHL manager, general manager, in the next couple weeks.
Well, here, I'm going to sum this all up for you in 15 seconds what they should do. Bufflin goes, Kane goes. I get me two players that are halfway decent, and I still make the playoffs, and I win my first playoff game in a Winnipeg sweater. That's how we do this. Anyway, great stuff today, Travis. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Phil. Have a good one.
Oh, you too. That was Travis Rubinick, and you can catch him over at arcticicehockey.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. There's a big battle tonight going on between the Atlanta Hawks and the Golden State Warriors. Now, we're recording this on Monday, so if there are injuries, well, so be it. We can't help that. We can't even predict those. But what we want to do, and when I say we, it's Chris Willis from PeachtreeHoops.com and I, are going to take a look at a side-by-side comparison of these two amazing front runners in their individual conferences and see just how they shake out. And Chris is on the line. Chris, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Phil. It's great talking to you.
It's great to have you here. Now, I saw over on one of the postings over at your site where someone wanted to see a side-by-side breakdown of these two basketball teams, and I thought we would give it a shot today. Now, I'll do the Warriors here first for you. And if this is the case, and this everything shakes out the way it's supposed to, Steph Curry's their point guard. Klay Thompson is the shooting guard. Harrison Barnes, small forward. Draymond Green, small forward. And Andrew Bogut, if he's healthy, at center. Now, who starts for the Atlanta Hawks?
Oh, well, you'll run down. Hopefully, if everybody's healthy, you'll have run down Jeff Teague at the point. Kyle Korver at shooting guard. Damari Carroll at small forward. Paul Millsap at power forward. And Al Horford at center.
Yep, that's about right. Now, we'll get to the benches in a minute, but Steph Curry, Jeff Teague, back and forth. On paper, the edge goes to Stephen Curry, Mr. Curry. He's the all-star starter in the West. What do you think is it closer than the paper says and the stats say?
Oh, wow. I mean, Steph's a wonderful player. His shooting numbers are just off the charts. I've sitting here wondering myself how the Hawks might try to defend him. Especially coming off of seeing that Golden State runs a spread attack much like theirs. So it's going to be tough on Jeff T. I think the biggest thing the Hawks can have is to make Curry work hard on the defensive end of the floor. T can do that, his speed and quickness in pick and roll game. Maybe trying to try to wear him down a little bit as the game goes on. But, man, as a shooter, he just scares the daylights out of you.
And he should, because he's probably the best shooter in the NBA, probably. I mean, I'm sure you can make a case for others, and that's not the purpose of this show. But he's a better shooter than Jeff Teague. And that's what you really have to get him to do, because there are times when he goes clank foo on you. And that's important to remember. I would keep him away from the rim. I would keep him out there and let him do what he has to do. I think if you can contest his shot, you have a better shot at it, obviously. If he's wide open, forget it. He doesn't miss those. But I think we're going to give the edge. That's the difference between the two. In a one-on-one battle, I think it's going to be Steph Curry. Steph Curry is more offensive-minded than Jeff Teague. Jeff Teague is probably more defensive-minded than Steph Curry.
Yeah, Jeff's made some big strides with his defense this year. He's gave a more consistent effort. I know it might sound crazy. Steph's averaging 8 assists a game, but Jeff Teague might be just a bit more of a playmaker in that he kind of drives what the Hawks do. He scores a little bit. He may not average quite as many assists as Curry does, but still, he's very good at getting the Hawks into their offense and getting things set up. So, yeah, that's going to be a wonderful matchup. But, yeah, I agree with you. If you have to grade the one-on-one matchup, I'd give the edge, a slight edge to Curry there.
Yeah, sure. And one of the big reasons why Steph Curry has so many assists is because his shooting guard, Klay Thompson, sometimes doesn't miss either. And that's something that we have to remember. Now, Klay Thompson, Kyle Korver is probably a more complete basketball player than Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson is more splash, more flash. Kyle Korver brings his lunch pail to work every night. And if you leave him alone, he's a better shooter than Klay Thompson.
Yeah, one of the real treats of this game will be watching Klay and Kyle work to get open. I mean, you could probably do just a video segment, and show that as an example of how to move without the basketball and how to get the shot, get your shot off, and it's going to be great to see. I'm not sure how the Hawks will play this. You might see a little bit of, if Damari's healthy, you may see Carroll matched on Klay. I'm not sure Kyle will be chasing him. That'll be an interesting adjustment to see. But, you know, Korver, again, on the flip side of that, Warriors may elect not to have Klay chase Korver off all those screens either. Kyle is just always in motion for Atlanta. So, yeah, that's one of the most intriguing matchups of this game. The game within the game will be seeing how each team tries to limit the open opportunities that Thompson and Korver get.
And they'll get a bunch because that's just the way both teams operate. But Harrison Barnes and Damari Carroll, I'm giving the edge to Damari Carroll if Damari Carroll is healthy. And the reason being is I think Damari Carroll can be more offensive-minded at times, and he's a better defender.
Damari has had not enough people talk about the season Damari's had. Damari's awesome defender. I mean, he's the heart and soul of the team, the Hawks defense. Mike Budenholzer says that night after night. But when you look at Damari's stats, I mean, he's averaging just under 12 points a game, but the guy's shooting 40% from three-point range, which is, a career best. And that's huge for Atlanta because there's often times there he's the guy that is found on the wing who's wide open, and he's been knocking that shot down. And, he's a bit of an X factor. If he's scoring above his average, Hawks have a really, really good chance of winning a basketball game. But his focus is defensively, though. And if he's charged with chasing Klay Thompson or so, it's going to be key that he does a good job there and stays out of foul trouble.
Yeah, I think you're right. And a lot of people do miss that. And I don't, because I watch the Hawks, and you can see the difference when he's on the floor and when he's not. And then you've got this power forward. Draymond Green has had a fantastic year. He'll probably become the most improved player in the NBA. Without a doubt, he's had a triple-double, I believe, this season. He squares off against Paul Millsap. And I'm going to call that one a draw because they both do some things really well and some things not so well.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Draymond Green. In fact, I advocated the Hawks drafting him a few years ago. I thought he would fit very nicely with some of the things they wanted to do. But I don't know if I can call it a draw because Paul Millsap's pretty much unbelievable. He's done a great job for Atlanta this year. He's an all-star. I think he can give Draymond some problems at the defensive end of the floor. Of course, the Warriors aren't going to play through Draymond offensively the way Atlanta probably will Paul. So, that's a chance that the Hawks have to make up some ground there, I think, in this matchup. Millsap could have a big game here on the boards offensively, stretching that defense out to the three-point range even. But I like that as a slight edge for Atlanta. But you can't sleep on the job Draymond Green's done.
That's fair enough. I give you that one. Now, what about Andrew Bogut? Now, the thing about Bogut is he's very underrated. Bogut is one of those guys who, when he's on the floor, when he starts, Golden State usually wins, and he'll go up against Al Horford. How do you like this one?
The scary thing is Bogut's been hurt a lot of the year, and Warriors have just rolled right on. I haven't looked to see what his status is going to be for Friday night, but that's an intriguing matchup. Bogut likes to – he's a rim protector. He's a good, great defensive player, good rebounder. But the Hawks may look to – with if he's having to guard Al Horford, Horford's going to be pulling him away from the basket. So that's going to make things a little tough You may see a little bit more David Lee in there, just to try to, as a more athletic guy, to try to chase Horford out to the perimeter. Al's been playing really, really well. He's shooting at a very, very high percentage during this winning streak. So, I kind of like that matchup for the Hawks a little bit, but Bogut, there's no dismissing Bogut's job, the job he does as a defender, and just anchors their defensive efforts.
Now we've got about 40 seconds left. We'll get to the bench real quick. Now, I would have said before the injuries that Atlanta had a deeper bench, but now I'm not so sure. Coming off the bench for Golden State is David Lee, Andre Iguodala, and Maurice Spates. For Atlanta, you've got Dennis Schroeder, who's had a great year, by the way.
Yeah, you got Schroeder, you got Mike Scott, Kent Bazemore possibly if DeMar Carroll's healthy and can start. But yeah, definitely losing Thabo Sefolosha hurt you. You would have seen him in the game a lot, probably alongside Carroll as they tried to, and maybe even matched up against Steph Curry in some alignment. So yeah, I think Atlanta's hurting a little bit. That takes a little bit of the luster off this matchup, but I mean, they'll need a good night from Schroeder. They'll need a good night from Mike Scott to play even or have a slight edge on that bench. But Golden State's really, really good. So it's going to be a fun matchup.
It should be, and I'm going to give the edge in this one to the Atlanta Hawks. I think they're going to win by three.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's in Atlanta. It's at home. I think the biggest key, though, is Carroll. If Carroll can play, I think Atlanta's got a chance even without Sefolosha. But man, I'm a big fan of this Golden State team too. So it's gonna be a great ball game. One of the best regular season matchups of the year so far, I believe.
Oh, I agree. I'm a fan of both teams, so it should be fun. Chris, great stuff. Thanks for being here to help us figure out this incredible matchup tonight.
Well, I hope we shed some light on it. I mean, it's tough. You go one-on-one like that, it's really tough, but it's going to be a fun ball game Friday. I appreciate you having me on to talk about it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. That was Chris Willis, and you can find him over at peachtreehoops.com. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. It's Oakland A's time, and joining me to talk about the Oakland A's, please welcome from athleticsnation.com, Alex Hall is in the house. Alex, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
It's February, Phil. That means it's only a couple of weeks till pitchers and catchers report.
Yeah, I thought about that too, man, because I'm into the mailbag now. We're in the mailbag portion of the season, because we've come up with everything. Billy Bean kept us busy all winter, and we want to thank him for that. Send a big shout-out to you, Mr. Bean. Thank you for giving us something to talk about every week during the hot stove season. We do greatly appreciate that. But we got some questions, and one of them, Alex, is this one. And this is a good one. I can't wait to hear your answer. A listener wanted to know how the A's will make the playoffs with the roster that they have now.
Well, unfortunately, the first part is, we don't know yet. We can't look like last year, 2014. You could look at that A's roster and say, I have a pretty good bet that this group is going to make it at least into the playoffs. You could almost, you can never really do this in sports, but you could almost start planning that part. Be like, hey, not only do we think we're going to make the playoffs, but here's why we think we'll make it through the playoffs where we didn't in the past. Well, this year, you don't have that kind of guarantee because there's a lot more question marks up and down the team. Some of the young hitters, you don't know if they'll fully develop. You don't know, which of the young pitchers will flame out and which of them will pitch like you kind of hope they will. You don't know if Jesse Hahn will turn into the kind of mid-rotation starter. Will Marcus Semien hit? Will someone get hurt? You have no idea. So the way I would look at it is to make the playoffs in today's landscape, what you're really looking at is, the lowest bar of entry is a wild card, right? And there's two chances to get that now. So like 85 to 90 wins is around where you need to be, like a bare minimum to even be thinking about getting into the playoffs. What, last year to get a wild card, you needed 87, 88, 86 wins, depending on your league. So, and then we ended up seeing two wild card teams making the World Series. So, that lowest bar of entry is enough to get you all the way to the top. So all we need to think about is how to get to that low bar of entry. And of course, what matters is where you finish in your standings, right? So you want yourself to get to your 85 to 90 wins, and you need to be able to beat at least three of the teams in your division. So we got to look at who in the AL West we're afraid of. And of course, I'm sure we'll give each team a longer look in the future, but you've got the Angels, who, 98 wins and led the major leagues last year. You know, you gotta hope that that'll come down a little bit. Maybe that pitching that got so strong in the second half won't quite be the same. You've got your Mariners, who I fear might be a little bit better than they were last year. So, you know, Angels, Mariners, that's two teams that are going to be pretty big in the division, and you're going to have to hope maybe one of them falters a little bit, or just that the A's can catch enough fire to pass one of them. The Rangers, you have no idea what to expect out of them, because they were supposed to be another top team last year, and then, of course, just everybody went down. You know, if you thought the A's had a lot of injuries last year, you know, the Rangers were 100 times worse. And then you've got the Astros, who probably aren't ready yet, but you know, the 2012 A's didn't look like they're ready yet, and a lot of people don't think the 2015 A's are ready. So it doesn't take much for that team who has kind of started putting together their good core, you know, that good young core. It doesn't take a lot for that team to suddenly make the jump into contention. So it's easy to still write off the Astros and say, oh, you know, they're getting better, but they're not there yet. But that can change pretty quickly, and they can start looking like a contender too. So it's going to be a tough division. In order for the A's to compete, they're going to need at least, you know, a couple of these young pitchers. They just picked up a lot of young starting pitchers. They're going to need at least one or two of them to do something to supplement the more familiar names in the rotation, like Sonny and Kazmir. You know, you go into a season like this, and you're going to assume your familiar veteran players are going to do something like you would expect. You know, you would expect that Sonny Gray, that Scott Kazmir will at least have a decent season. And so in order to build on that, you would need to see one or two of these new young starters come up. I think Marcus Semien is going to be a big linchpin, just because, not because his ceiling is necessarily higher or lower, but because of the important role the team is putting him in, trying to make him that everyday shortstop. If he can stick as that, as a decent, you know, shortstop, you know, at least as good as Jed Lowry on defense, you know, passable, and also hit a little bit, he'll become a very valuable player. Between that, you know, maybe Brett Laurie staying healthy, you know, pick 2, 3, 4, 5 of these players to you know, stay totally healthy, have a good year, and now you're starting about talking about putting yourself into real contention.
Yeah, and don't forget Seattle's got a really good team too. They're going to be fantastic. I think that this is going to be a very tough West. It's going to be a wild West, like it was last year, only you throw in now another team. Seattle's a bona fide contender if they have the chemistry to do it and if they all have decent years, just like the A's. And that's what it's all about in baseball, having decent years. Texas was the hottest team in the second half of 2014.
But, you know, let me tell you one way the A's that I worry that they might not make the playoffs, and this is beyond all the normal, hey, all your pitchers could get hurt, that can happen to anybody, and it comes back to Semien. If Semien can't stick as a shortstop and they have to move him away, then the A's open up the same hole they had in their lineup last year. The same hole, you know, their infield right now is if you go by the 2014 stats and you go second base, shortstop, third base, the current group of guys, Semien, Zobrist, Laurie, they are better than last year's group that included Josh Donaldson, you know, the almost MVP kind of guy. Even removing Josh Donaldson, that second base, third base, shortstop combo got better because second and short were so terrible last year. So if Semien doesn't work at short, who goes and plays there? It's going to be the same kind of, you know, Perino or Sogard or someone from last year. And that's why I pick him, you know, as such an important piece, because if he doesn't work out like they think he does, there's, you know, they traded away, you know, Escobar. There's no real good backup plan there. You put Ben Zobrist at short, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I think he did play short last year there a few times, but in Tampa. But still, that's a good call. Semien is the key because they don't have anyone to back him up, anyone solid. Ugh, that's a tough one. You know, we also have to keep in mind and bear this in mind, folks, when you're talking about the Oakland Athletics, you never really know what you're going to have out there until you actually see them in uniform, because Billy Beane's not done yet. Hot stove season has not finished yet, and you don't know what he's going to do next. Maybe he's got his eyes on another shortstop. You really never know, Alex. And we've learned that the hard way, haven't we?
Yeah, and a similar spot like that would be catcher, where you've got Steven Vogt, you've got Josh Fegley, and then not really a lot left. But I don't know. There's something about catcher. I feel like it's easier if you really had to just go up. You know, they went out and picked up Soto last year for nothing. I feel like you could at least find, you know, a veteran to throw back there and at least hold his own. Maybe it wouldn't be quite as big of a weakness. But, yeah, shortstop and catcher, those have got to be the two weak positions right now as far as depth.
Yeah, because everything else is covered pretty much. At least there's backups there that are capable backups. And he did, he being Billy Beane, did a very good job of making sure that would happen. He's just not throwing in the season. He's just retooling and reloading. We'll have to wait and see. It should be interesting. But for them to win the division, that's going to be tough. A lot of things have to happen. California, you know, last year they had everything in their favor. Everything went according to Hoyle, and it happened for them. Whereas the A's, at one point, they didn't have a catcher. They were all out, you know, and Texas had the same issue. It's going to come down to health, and it's going to come down to who's hotter at the right time. And I'm kind of thinking it's going to be Oakland again this year.
I just like that you refer to them as California. That's a good old reference right there. Is that the Angels referring to them as California?
Yeah, sure, because that's what they used to be, the California Angels.
Hey, I still call them Anaheim at least.
Yeah, I get them all. You know what? They change so much, I just start calling them California. It is what it is. Alex, great stuff today. Thanks for reminding me how old I am.
I'll call them not in the playoff. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, they'll love that.
They have just as good of a chance, probably better chance than the A's of making it.
More than likely, but we'll have to wait and see. That's what's good. That's what's so fun about it. They have to actually play. All right, Alex, we'll see you next week, my friend.
Thanks a lot, Phil.
Thank you, sir. That was Alex Hall. And you can catch him over at athleticsnation.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return after these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio. Everybody
get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a very special offer. FanDuel will give you a 100% signing bonus of up to $200 with your first-time initial deposit. To receive this bonus, simply sign up at FanDuel using the promo code PhillyFlash and go win some cash with a flash at FanDuel.com.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you're looking for a great Portland Trail Blazers talk radio show, then look no further than the Blazers Edge podcast with Dave Deckard and Phil Nasons. For weekly hard-hitting commentary about your Trailblazers and fun NBA talk as well, please try the Blazers Edge podcast at BlazersEdge.com. Maximum Sports Channels is more than just a radio station. Phil's Fantasy Sports Blog, The Writer's Garret, up-to-the-minute news feeds, great sports and entertainment commentary, Maximum Sports TV, including professional powerboat racing, and of course, the hottest music on the planet. Maximum Sports Channels. We're more than just a radio station.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Hi, this is Jordan Addison, and you are listening to the Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. It's once again time to talk about all the latest additions the New York Mets have made this spring. And joining me to do just that, please welcome from bloggingmets.com, Mark Berman is in the house. Mark, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Good. I guess the show is over if we're going to talk about the Mets additions. Well, so, good night, everybody.
Yeah, they don't do anything. I mean, really, it's just ridiculous. But, you know, baseball is boring in the winter anyway. But if you follow the Mets or you cover the Mets, you just basically have to make things up as you go and feed off of these other people because you can't talk about them. There's nothing to talk about. And it's almost embarrassing. But one of these writers from Bleacher Report, I don't know his name. I'm going to tweet him, though, because I think this is one of the most ridiculous things that I've heard coming out of someone who claims to know anything about baseball in a long time. But they were talking about which young fellas in the minors are going to make the biggest splash on their baseball clubs. And this guy says, I'll choose Noah Syndergaard as the big, hard-throwing right-hander will make the Mets look silly for ultimately deciding to send him back to AAA when they just can't find a way to fit him into their opening day rotation. Now, that's technically not what happened, but come on, be real.
You know what? I don't disagree with this guy.
Okay.
I think Syndergaard, even though he had some issues in the minor leagues last year, I thought they should have brought him up in the middle of the season. I mean, the Mets weren't going anywhere. Why not just get the kid started in the majors? But they didn't want to, and it's all because of money, because they would have started his clock. And I think there's almost no way Syndergaard makes the team out of spring training unless he somehow, you know, throws 20 innings and has a 1 ERA and strikes out 50 batters, and they'll be forced to. But I think he's ready. And I think they'll end up sending him down and maybe bringing him up midseason so they don't start his clock. And, you know, I was reading somewhere, some writer said, hey, why don't you bring these guys up earlier? Why waste all these strikeouts in the minor leagues? And I agree with that. I mean, if he's ready, he's ready. If he's the future of the team, he's the future of the team. Why not just bring him up right now? And if you have to send Nice to the bullpen with an addition to G or Cologne or release one or whatever, just do it. I mean, the future is now, and just let him pitch.
I'm in a group with a bunch of major league scouts.
Mm-hmm.
And when I brought up Syndergaard's name in preparation for this segment, they all laughed. No one thinks he can pitch in the majors, at least not now. He was horrid at AAA. He's an attitude problem in AAA. Now, he's out there, and there's another article we'll look at later. I'm not against Noah Syndergaard. What I'm against is him taking the spot of a major leaguer who actually can win games. Noah Syndergaard couldn't win games at the AAA level. What makes you think he's going to win at the major league level? He's not ready to pitch in the majors. He's a head case. He thinks he's better than he is. There's a reason they kept him there. There's a reason they never brought him back up. I'm glad they left him there. I wish they would trade him and get somebody who can actually play instead of waiting for this kid to grow up in AAA. I mean, forget about this beast. That's what they call him, the beast. If he was really so good, why did Toronto let him go and Darno go for a 38-year-old knuckleballer?
Well, I mean, to answer that, Toronto was ready to win now. So that's why they thought Dickey was going to be one of the missing link in their rotation. It was a silly trade overall because they let go two young guys for an old guy. But that's why they did it. They were just in win-now mode. You know, don't forget, Matt Harvey struggled with AAA because he was frustrated because he was ready to be called up. And I think Syndergaard is going through the same thing. He's like, why am I here? I should be in the majors, and I agree with him.
Since he knows more about baseball than guys who spent their entire lives, the kid's 22, he needs to shut up and do what he's told. I mean, that's what you learn in the Mets while you're there. He's not ready. I have guys, friends of mine, who've watched him pitch in Las Vegas, and they go, what's all the big thing about? No one can tell you what the thing is about because he threw one inning in spring training. But this is what he had to say in another article. Everyone's talking about Noah Syndergaard again this year, and I don't know why. I'm excited for how things are going to play out this spring training. So am I. My biggest excitement is going to be watching him go back to AAA.
You see, I can't disagree with you more. I just think I watched him in spring training last year, and he looked incredible and looked like he's ready for the majors. I know he had issues in AAA and even admitted he relied on his fastball too much, and he needs to learn how to be a pitcher, not a thrower. But it's just, It's frustrating. I mean, it's all about money. It's completely about money. They didn't want to start his clock last year, so they didn't bring him up. And now, I mean, the rotation is full, but they need to make room for him. I think if they send him down, which they're going to, it's going to be a big mistake because Nice and or Cologne are going to flop. Could possibly flop, and they're going to have this stud in the minors because they're paying these guys too much money.
Yeah, but he's not any better than the other guys that they have. He's going to be the trade bait. That's what they're going to use him for. I think they're waiting to see what Matt Harvey's going to be like. I'd rather have Harvey. At least I know what I'm going to get with Harvey. And Wheeler, man, what are they going to do with Wheeler? You're going to have to move somebody. And you're going to have to move somebody to benefit your baseball team. You're not going to get a lot for a John Neese or a Dylan G or even a Bartolo Colon. You need something. If the New York Mets aren't going to pay anyone, they're going to have to make a trade. And the only way they're going to get a real baseball player is by trading one of these guys. Syndergaard is the guy you trade.
You know, if they didn't trade him this offseason, I don't think they're ever going to trade him. I mean, Sandy Alderson even said when he spoke to season ticket holders Wednesday night, he said he has no interest in trading Syndergaard. So if he doesn't have any interest now, he's not going to do it. I think eventually Wheeler is going to be the guy who gets traded because I think he doesn't look like he's the ace everyone thought he was going to be. I think he's good. He's got a good middle-of-the-rotation guy, and I think he's the guy that's going to be traded.
I think it's going to be Syndergaard. You know, you don't believe – you say that Sandy Alderson's a liar many times. Why do you believe him now? You know, that's all general managers speak. I'll never trade him. And then you notice they go, just like the coach is safe. Usually when they say that, off they go. He's just raising the price.
Maybe. But I think Syndergaard is part of his legacy because he traded for him. Wheeler is too in a big way. But I think Syndergaard – like Wheeler was kind of a no-brainer because everyone knew he was a big-time prospect. Syndergaard was in single A, was not a tremendous prospect when Alderson got him. So I think Alderson, like, hey, I discovered this guy. This is my diamond in the rough. I'm going to build my legacy on him. I don't know. Just again, I have no reason to think that. It's just something I think is going through his head.
And that's fair enough. See, this is what the Mets make us do because they don't do anything to actually talk about. David Wright has made the news once again. He gets interviewed quite a bit, too, and why not? He's the captain by default of the New York Mets. And here's the thing with Captain Wright. He says that this year is going to be amazing. They're going to go to the playoffs. We're going to be playing in October. I think their last game is October 1st, so they will be playing in October.
Yeah, I mean, Wright always says the right things. I mean, he, you know, every year he's like, I'm going to come back strong, I'm going to come back strong, and then something else happens. I like him, but, you know, he has to say what he's saying, so I don't even put much stock into it. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think the Mets will make the playoffs. I think we agree on that. If they don't make the playoffs, they have to blow the team up, and they're not going to. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Again, we would love to see the Mets make the playoffs, but it'll be really interesting to see what happens next offseason. If they don't.
You're right. They have to blow up that team, and it starts with Captain America, and he's going to go. He's not going to finish that contract. He's going to be out. Nah. Oh, sure he will. He's the one you blow up first. You still can get something for him. If you got a bunch of bums, he's an all-star.
Yeah, but he's a 10-5 guy. If he doesn't want to go, he won't, and I don't think he wants to go.
Well, who wouldn't want to go? He gets to play 100 games a year, and everybody worships him. Yeah. I mean, he hits 8 home runs in a season, and everyone, oh, I can't wait to see him play again, or David. Come on, he's done. He's been done for 2 years. I hope he comes back strong because I want to see the Mets in the playoffs, but I don't think it's going to happen on his watch. Mark, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show with me. Tough to talk about the Mets in this kind of condition.
I know.
All right, that was Mark Berman. You can catch him over at bloggingmets.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. We're wrapping up an amazing day of sports talk and joining me to do some fantasy baseball, National League, starting pitching, sleepers. Please welcome from rotoadvice.com, Jason Walker is in the house. Jason, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Oh, doing great. Loving getting involved and getting deep into our fantasy baseball stuff, getting draft prep for that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's just go back and forth today because we only have a very small amount of time. I wish we could do like an hour of this because it'd be a lot more interesting, I think. Jared Kosart, Miami. I think he's going to be a sleeper. He pitched really well towards the end, and I like him. And he's going to be the number two pitcher on the Miami Marlins, and he probably won't get drafted in a 10-team league.
That's a good one. I mean, there's two ways you can go. And when picking late, you can pick upside guys like that, or you can go veterans who could still give you some positive numbers, even though, you know, they're not as sexy a pick. And that's where I'm going with my first sleeper is Matt Garza. Injury prone. Yeah, you bet. Sure. But the innings that he does give you gives you a nice low whip with a good offense behind him. Garza's swinging strike number is still about a 9%. He finished up the season pretty well. Like I said, always a low whip. Nice guy to target late in drafts.
You want to laugh? Yeah, I have Matt Garza always on my list. It's on my blog today.
Is that right?
Yeah, I have Matt Garza. But that's weird because these things never line up the way they should. We've been pretty close on all these pitchers so far.
Yeah.
Okay, my next... Well, yeah,
we're either going to be great or we're going to stink together. Yeah, one of the two.
Yeah, well, I'll probably change my mind about 50 times from now until the drafts. But here's what I have next. So Yoshi Wada from Chicago, the Cubs. I like him, man. He had, you know what, he did really well. He was coming off that Tommy John surgery, and he got a chance to play with Chicago late, and he's got a shot at cracking that rotation this year. And if he does, with what they've got there, he's got a good chance. He pitches the ball well. He had a fairly decent BABIP of .296. His whip was .124. His FIP was .375. His xFIP .396. But it's still, I like him. I don't know why. Maybe because he won me money last year in Daily Fantasy. But I like him. Soyashi Wada.
You know, liking somebody because he made you money is never a bad thing. I mean, let's be honest. But, you know, there's a guy that's not getting drafted right now, but I expect it to change as the spring goes on. And that's Shelby Miller, who went over to the Braves this year. You know, Shelby, obviously, with a fantastic 2013. 2014 started hard. In fact, left-handers were crushing him in April and May. But he kind of bounced back a little bit toward the end of the year. He's in Atlanta. They're going to be counting on him quite a bit. And, you know, right now he's not being drafted. So you can get a guy that could, you know, possibly provide – $6 to $7 of value if you were in some kind of auction at the end, giving you positive value for a late round pick. And that's the kind of thing I'm looking for when I'm picking late with some pitchers. So Shelby Miller, Atlanta.
I had him on my list and I took him off because I thought he might get drafted. I started reading a little more and I thought maybe he would. I think he's rated in the top 50.
Yeah, he's starting to get up a little bit maybe, but he still is ADP is still – in a 10-team league, he's still not getting drafted right now.
Probably not. No, he might, though. You never know. If it's an Atlanta Braves fan, they might draft him. But, yeah, that's a pretty good pick. Now, here's my next one. Jonathan Nease from the New York Mets, because he's always forgotten on that team, and he usually comes through. His walk rate of 2.16 per nine innings was decent, almost seven strikeouts a game. The thing about Nease is he pitches in a big ballpark, which means his ERA is going to be like 3.50 or below, and we can live with that, and I can live with that, and I would not hesitate to draft Nease in my last pick.
I like John Nease. I used him quite a bit in daily last year, also as a nice salary relief guy. Solid pick, and you can't beat that ballpark. Really good there. I like. I'm going to go with another guy that was good in 2013, took a step back in 2014. That's Tony Cingrani, out in Cincinnati. He was overthrowing a little bit last year. Cingrani has a good fastball. If you look at the numbers, it's 91-92, which doesn't seem overpowering. But with his delivery, it looks a lot faster. And he has a five-star changeup. But he was throwing his changeup a little too fast last year. Ideally, you want a 7-mile-an-hour break, 8-mile-an-hour break between fastball and changeup, which he did in 2013 when he became a pretty popular mid-round pick last year. But it got a little too fast. He only had like a 3 or 4 mile an hour change. It wasn't enough of a change of speed, and he got hit around a little bit, probably due to some of the injury. But I think the Reds will have to go to Cingrani this year, and he's got the stuff to take a real step up. So late in the draft, he's not getting drafted right now. He's definitely worth a flyer because he can pay off big for you this year.
That's a good pickup because I drafted him last year in a 10-team right. league. He was awful, but he didn't get that many chances either. Then he had Latos up and down, and it was weird. But that's a good pick. You know, he's a good sleeper. I like that pick. Now, here's what I have next, my last one of the day here, and I'm sure everyone's breathing a sigh of relief. Odrisimar Despany. Despain, I can never say this character's name. You always laugh because I'm a terrible name guy. But for the San Diego Padres, I tell you, I love pitchers in Petco Park. Love pitchers in Petco Park. I love pitchers with home run rates of 0.56 and less. And I really love swinging strike rates of 7.3%. And I can take 6 strikeouts a game from my last pitcher. And you know what else I like is that he has a 52% ground ball rate. So that means he's not so bad on the road if he can get it all together, of course.
Oh, of course. I mean, that's one of the things. I actually, you know, to be honest, I targeted him when he would be pitching on the road. I definitely used hitters against him last year. Definitely pitching in Petco. Some of those splits, you look at some pitchers like him and Jorge De La Rosa, who actually pitched really good in Coors Field last year. You can pick some guys. If you've got a deep enough bench, you should look at some of those splits to see, you know, where you can mix and match and stream a little bit, even within your own roster, guys like that. This with my last one, I want to give you an option. If you want to go with some kids, Noah Syndergaard of the Mets is a good value. I like him a lot coming up. Jimmy Nelson's going to start off in the bullpen for Milwaukee, but another kid with some terrific stuff out there could give you some positive value. And if you're looking for a veteran, hey, nothing wrong with pulling the trigger on Tim Hudson. I know he had a terrible ankle injury, but Huddy still has an elite ground ball factor going for him, pitches in a great park, and is a consummate pro. So if he's on the hill in 2015, take a shot.
You know, it's funny you bring up Syndergaard. We were talking about him on the Mets report today and how he's going to try to crack the roster this year. I don't think he will. I'm not a big fan of Noah Syndergaard. I don't like jerks. And I don't like people who are entitled or act entitled. And I don't like people who have nicknames like Beast who haven't done anything yet. So I'm not going to even go near him. But you know something. If he does crack the lineup, because you know Harvey's not going to be a – Harvey's – right now Matt Harvey is number 12. No freaking way.
Yeah. No, you can't do that.
Not with an innings restriction. And why? Because he said he can pitch. That doesn't mean anything.
You got to let somebody else take some of those chances that high. Now, if you're looking late in drafts and Harvey's for some reason is still on the board, then absolutely. I mean, there's a point where even injured players or guys who are suspended or something are worth the value that you're taking them at. But there's no way you can target him as a top 15 starter, even in NL only leagues this year. It's just it's too best case scenario for my likings. I think he has to almost deliver to that level for it to pay off. And, you know, there's too many things working against him that could prevent him from hitting his ceiling this year.
Well, I'll tell you, you said that really well. Great stuff today, Jason. Thanks for being here. Next week, we'll talk American League starting pitchers.
You got it, Phil. Thanks.
Thank you. That was Jason Walker. And you can catch him over at rotoadvice.com. You can also catch him at peachtreehoops.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's show. Until next time, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly,
ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.